Welcome to SEC Unfiltered, home of the best SEC content on the internet. The following is brought to you by our friends over at Prize Picks. Go download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com, and when you do, use the promo code SECU to receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks is the simplest fantasy game on the market, focused around prop total entries. You pick 2 to 6 players, and you can win up to 10 times on any entry. Prize Picks has no sharks, optimizers, or mass multi-entry guys. It's literally just you against the projection. They also allow mixed sport entry. So, for example, you can take the over on LeBron, parlay with the under on Mahomes. They've got college sports, pro sports, literally anything and everything you can think of. They have got it over at Prize Picks. They also have a slick, easy-to-use mobile app, both on the App Store and Google Play. They're rated 4.8 stars in the App Store with rave reviews as well. Guys, so many fans and listeners of SEC Unfiltered have made tons of money with our friends at Prize Picks, and you should as well. So again, go download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com, and when you do, use the promo code SECU to receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. Be sure to check them out and tell them that Chris from SEC Unfiltered sent you. Let's get it.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Talking all things Alabama Crimson Tide spring football as a new era has begun in Tuscaloosa. Alex Scarborough joins the show. He's a senior writer at Bama 247, does a fantastic job talking all things and covering all things Crimson Tide. Alex, what's going on, man? Appreciate you taking the time.
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
So, Alex, let's first start with this. Like I mentioned, it's a new era in Tuscaloosa. Kalen DeBoer off and running. Nick Saban now, of course, retiring a couple months ago. We've seen the videos on social media and the differences, I guess you could say, in culture. And we all knew. And first, I would say Kalen DeBoer embracing being himself, not trying to be anything he's not, not trying to be Nick Saban 2.0, which I think is a great thing for him and a great sign. But as you can imagine, it's kind of weird, right? Seeing all the videos coming out from spring ball and all the music at practice, like things are different. So from your perspective, from your vantage point, how has that gone? How has the team received that? How has the fan base received that? What's been the overall vibe and the mood around Tuscaloosa in Kalen DeBoer's first spring practice?
I mean, there's no getting around it. It's strange for everybody. I mean, I covered Alabama football for 12, 13 years at ESPN, eventually covering the SEC, but always living in Birmingham, always down in Tuscaloosa quite a bit. And going out to that first practice, first you hear music, which is weird because that was never the case. Second, you don't hear Nick Saban screaming, a weird not being the case. And then you don't see the straw hat. There's so many things you've just become so accustomed to at Alabama that have changed. And I think you're right about on the fact of Kalen DeBoer would have made a mistake trying to be Nick Saban. Nobody else is going to be Nick. I think Greg Byrne, I spoke to him about the decision to hire Kalen. That was part of the thought process, is bringing somebody in who's confident enough, has the resume to say, look, this is the way I do things. We'll, you know, take into account what happened before. We'll obviously respect the tradition that's there, but I have a system that's worked and I'm going to stick with that. So you're seeing that play out. And I think so far from the fan base, there's been a lot of respect about the fact of the way he's gone about it and towing that line of not trying to disparage in any way the way Nick Saban did things, but also putting his own spin on things. I think one of the smartest things he did was in terms of the retention on the coaching staff, not just running backs coach Robert Gillespie, not just defensive line coach Freddie Roach. Those are two of the best guys he could have possibly kept. But in terms of the off-the-field stuff, keeping David Ballou, the head trainer, keeping Jeff Allen, David Ballou, the head strength coach, Jeff Allen, the head trainer, Ellis Ponder, the chief of staff, essentially, keeping all those things in place, keeping the fourth quarter program, which was this offseason conditioning program started by Nick Saban and Scott Cochran and continued on down the line. So keeping those things that worked, putting your own spin on it, and I think being more adaptive to what college football is now. Look, we're going to have the spring portal open up here in a few days, the spring transfer window. And I think what Kalen DeBoer has built, what his program is maybe really well suited for what today's college football looks like. So I know there's a lot there. It's just it's weird. We're all getting used to it, right? But I think so far, so good.
Alex, spring is certainly the time where you lay the groundwork, obviously focus on the fundamentals. And when you're Kalen DeBoer in your first spring, you know, instilling your culture, I think obviously is going to be really important. What's been the identity of Alabama football that you've picked up on, right? Every team, they take the identity of their head coach. What has been that identity they've worked so hard to instill this spring and the overall culture? Like, what are some of the buzzwords you're hearing or things that have stood out from the spring, if you will?
Yeah, it's interesting. There's just an overall vibe of positivity, right? Like there's a lot of, I remember going out to the first practice and you're seeing coaches, again, not screaming, but like patting guys on the back and being encouraging. And I remember seeing Freddie Roach grab Keon Keeley, our young, talented defensive end who's trying to find his way in the program and spending like a solid, you know, 2 minutes just working with him on something and say, okay, this is how you do it. Pat him on the back. Here you go. I think there's a lot of just trying to be a positive force with these guys, with these players. Again, probably a good thing with the portal, right? In terms of talent retention, but just trying to emphasize day by day improvement. We spoke to Jalen Milroe last night and just continue to emphasize, just get 1% better, right? Like this is not a this is not a rebuild. This is not a situation where, you know, most times a new coach comes in, he's got to fix something. There's not a lot to fix. It's just in terms of putting your own spin on it. And I think it's, you know, an offense that is going to be multiple. I think it's an offense that is going to try to be explosive. I think it's an offense that is going to utilize Jalen's athleticism, but also try to push him in terms of what he can do in terms of being a complete passer, that short to intermediate game. And then the defensive side, I think, could be particularly interesting. I don't know that we're talking a lot about it, but the shift in scheme from what we've seen from a Nick Saban defense to a Kane Womack defense, the 4-2-5, the way they're going to be able to mix and match things up front. I think they're going to try to be very multiple. They're going to try to be a team that flies around to the football. And I think you might see a lot of young guys play this year. There's a need, obviously, in terms of where they're hit with roster attrition. But just trying to get the best athletes out there and go. It's going to be really interesting to see. We're only, you know, we got a few more days of spring practice left and we A-Day, and we're still sort of getting a sense of what that is. But that discipline piece is still there. That intensity piece is still there. It's just a different spin on it. It's not as old school, I think, as what you would describe Nick Saban. I think it's more of a new school approach, offensive oriented. There's no way getting around that with Kalen DeBoer. But I think overall players are sort of into it and heard nothing but positive feedback.
Alex, let's start on the defensive side of the football specifically, because you mentioned Kane Womack and that new defensive scheme, the 4-2-5, and one of the biggest pieces that Bama will have to replace. Obviously, Caleb Downs exiting via the portal, goes to Ohio State. Bama did work, though. They cleaned up when it comes to this signing class. I think it was, what, 5 5-star defensive backs or something like that, a plethora of young talent in the secondary. What are you hearing the reports from Kane Womack's defense? Maybe some guys that have emerged, stepped up, because you know you got a great nucleus of returners, but there's going to be a lot of new faces, especially in that secondary.
Yeah, when I'm thinking about Alabama's defense, I'm thinking about strength through the middle, right? And I know you asked about the secondary in particular, but like there's returning talent at defensive tackle. Deontay Lawson and Jihad Campbell, inside linebacker, might be the best inside linebacker duo in the SEC, if not the country. They're really freaking good. And then at safety, you shift Malachi Moore up, one of the most experienced, talented guys in the SEC. You put him alongside a Keon Sab, the Michigan transfer, who day one, Kalen DeBoer was saying, this guy's got the it factor. People really raved about his experience, his intangibles. And, oh, yeah, he's pretty talented on top of that. So you have that nucleus up the middle. The questions on the defense, and in particular the secondary, is the cornerback position. You didn't just lose Kool-Aid McKinstry. You didn't just lose Terrion Arnold to the NFL. I mean, two of the best cornerbacks in the country last year. You also lost a guy in Trey Amos, who I think had the ability to be an all-SEC type cornerback. You lost a lot of depth at that position. You lost Kite. You lost Ricks. You lost a lot of guys. I understand why. They come to Alabama to play for the best defensive backs coach maybe all time, Nick Saban. So there's an exodus of talent. So can Damani Jackson, the former 5-star, the USC transfer, step in and become at least one spot where you say, I know, I feel good about that? The early returns on him have been really good. You're seeing the athleticism. You're seeing a little bit of the experience. But you're right to bring up those young guys. There's 3 5-star freshmen who were able to enroll early, in Mbakwe, Zabian Brown, and then, oh, God, I'm blanking on the third one. There's the third one, trust me. So it's just trying to get those guys on the field, get them reps, get them experience, because it is really hard, especially at the cornerback position, to come in and in the SEC with little experience and make a difference. And Mbakwe has really showed positive improvement. You hear good things about what's happening coming out of the scrimmage. But I think if you're looking ahead and peeking ahead to the portal, I think that's a spot cornerback that Alabama might go shopping a little bit. They feel good about the young guys, but it's just a matter of shoring it up. The one thing that I think is going to be interesting, again, when you go back to Kane Womack and the way the defense changes, not to get overly complicated, but Nick Saban's defense did what this thing called pattern matching, which is a really complicated way of playing man and zone at the same time. We'll just leave it at that. What they're doing now is what they're calling a vision defense, which is basically just an emphasis on putting your eyes on the football. If there's a guy running and there's no way the quarterback can get him the ball, we're watching the football. And I'm really interested to see if for young, inexperienced guys, if a system of defense that is geared toward what we all grew up playing in the backyard, see ball, get ball, can that get those guys accelerated on the field quicker and making plays? Time will tell on that. I don't think there's any such thing as a simple defense in the SEC or in high level college football, but I am curious to see what the transition in style means for the young guys and how quickly they're able to get on the field.
Alex, one of the most difficult things or one of the most difficult questions to find answers to or one of the most difficult positions to evaluate, I should say, in spring ball is the offensive line, right? Because it's not necessarily those live reps, those game day type reps you see. I mean, it's when you find out what you really have. But offensive line was such a black eye last year. Have we found some answers on the offensive line this spring? Do you feel like there's been positive reports? I know, obviously, you got a new offensive line coach bringing a couple guys from Washington, which is one of the best offensive lines, was actually anointed the best offensive line in the country. So has that led to what you feel like is a positive spring for the offensive line? Because it's never been, it feels like, at Bama, a talent issue. And, I mean, what happened last year just felt inexplicable, honestly. And you've got the Caden Proctor factor that he's coming back. I know he hasn't participated. So I guess I say all that to say, have we found, or do you feel like we found some answers on the offensive line where they're going to take a big jump?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, I try to be honest as a reporter. A lot of guys try to say, you know, oh, it's going to be this or that. I honestly don't know because it hasn't just been last season. Bryce Young was a magician at quarterback. You watched him play, and he was like Neo in the Matrix dodging pass rushers. It was insane how little protection he was afforded, how the running game really dropped off. You go back to Jahmyr Gibbs, a great running back, but he couldn't run between the tackles because they weren't built to do that. And since when was Alabama football unable to control the line of scrimmage? It was really strange the last few years because you're right, it wasn't a lack of talent. You look at the composite rankings, the recruits they brought in, it all said that they should be really good, and it just was not coming together. You got good individual performances from a guy like J.C. Latham and others, but it wasn't the cohesive thing that we were used to seeing. So you bring a guy like Scott Huff and you think, here it is. You know, the guy, he's going to be the offensive line coach. He had the one of the best offensive lines in the country in Washington. And oh, well, he's going to the NFL. So you start over. And I like Chris Kapilovich. He's one of the better offensive line coaches in the country, coming over from Baylor, but it's still TBD on what they're going to be because they had to replace both tackles. Now you're getting Proctor back, which is a start, we think, you know, until he goes in the portal and signs, who really knows. But they're solid up the middle. You like Booker, you like Jaden Roberts at guard. It's a question mark everywhere else. We thought Parker Brailsford was going to be a known commodity, a freshman All-American coming over from Washington. He hasn't been at practice for several weeks, and it's not health-related issues. It's non-football stuff where Kalen DeBoer is saying, you know, it's not a transfer thing, but until the transfer portal comes and goes, we don't know if it's going to be. It's a fair question to ask, and then we don't know why he's not playing. So he's TBD. You got a guy named James Brockermeyer, who his brother was the guy everybody expected coming into Alabama to be the star. He's looking like the first-team center. And you wonder why, if you were the third center on a team last year where you couldn't get the ball effectively to the starting quarterback, a simple snap, what's going on there? So not to be overly negative, but it's just there's so many question marks. And you start with, can Caden Proctor come back? Can Parker Brailsford come back? They're probably going to – I know they're going to have to go into the portal and add bodies, particularly a tackle. So I don't know how they get worse because it's been really disappointing the last few years at the offensive line. But I can't sit here today and say they're going to be demonstratively better. There's still a lot of things that have to happen before that.
Alex, the moment Kalen DeBoer was hired, I think a lot of the attention turned to Jalen Milroe, and I think there were some questioning whether he was going to be Kalen DeBoer's quarterback. And we saw, I believe, DeBoer brought in a transfer from Washington where he was. And so I think the speculation began, is there this quarterback battle? You know, Jalen Milroe last year, fantastic athlete. I thought he played well. I thought at times, though, I think there were some out there, some critics questioning, can he lead Alabama football to a national championship? Has there been any sort of quarterback battle? Is that a manufactured storyline? Do you look at Jalen Milroe? Has he solidified himself this spring as this is his football team? And how has he grasped Kalen DeBoer's offense?
The short answer is yes. This is his football team. Kalen DeBoer has made it clear time and time again he is getting all of the first team reps. The long answer is more complicated, right? Because I think it was fair to question how he fits in the offense, where his development is, because there's no escaping the fact he played one of his worst games at the end of the year. I mean, it was the only game he did not score a touchdown. And there are moments where he just looked, for a guy who is so athletic, he didn't always play the position athletically, right? It wasn't quick. It wasn't making quick decisions. I'm going, I'm running. Everything seemed to be a half second behind sometimes. And he was so good as an athlete, he could make up for that. But you wanted to see more fluidity at the position. You wanted to see more command of the offense. You wanted to see the short to intermediate passing game where it was operating at a higher level. Just getting the ball to a running back going out of the flat was sometimes a problem. There were a couple passes in the postseason, including one in the championship. If he hits the running back in stride, it's a first down. They're moving the chains. Instead, they punt the football. So there are little things where he can make a huge improvement. And then you do wonder, Austin Mack, the Washington transfer, big, good-looking kid with a live arm, and he's athletic. But he's only 17 years old. He enrolled early. He skipped his senior season of high school. So he's young. And I think this is Jalen Milroe's team, but we're still waiting to see how he grows in the offense. I will say, from talking to coaches, they have been overwhelmingly positive about Jalen. And this is not just on the record for public relations consumption. This is saying this guy is getting in here at the crack of dawn. He is into the offense. He's into the fact that he has a quarterback coach who is overwhelmingly positive with him and wants to feed him the best he could possibly feed him. And then a head coach who is also offensive oriented. Getting that in tandem has been a nice change of pace for Milroe. And then you talk to his camp and everybody wonders, you know, obviously a guy that talented, does he play with the portal, you know, going into the season, going into the spring because of the money he could command? I said, no, this guy coming out of his camp he loves it there. He loves the opportunity to learn a new offense. He feels it's more geared toward what he can do as an athlete and as a passer. So there's a lot still left to learn about Jalen, but it's been overwhelmingly positive coming out of the spring. I am very curious to see, in relation to the portal, how they're able to retain all those quarterbacks, because Ty Simpson's had a really good spring. Dylan Lonergan is a guy who continues to look good. I don't know if they can keep everybody together, but I don't think Milroe's the question mark coming out of spring football.
Today's episode is brought to you by Unified Healing. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. No matter where you are, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/SEC to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/SEC. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System. Some of the question marks, Alex, could be who was he throwing to? Who were his playmakers? Who are some of the guys you're hearing about that have really emerged and have stepped up and are going to be helping Jalen Milroe in that offense?
It starts with Jeremy Bernard, the Washington transfer, kind of a Swiss Army knife, played a lot as a sophomore for the Huskies, had 34 catches last year. And you know that was a crowded receiver room there. Mm. So you're fighting for catches. But he's a guy who I think this coaching staff believes can be a difference maker in the SEC right away. Excuse me. And then you move on from there. You have a Kendrick Law, Kobe Prentice, two guys who are very, if you get them the ball in space, they can make plays. They just haven't made a lot of plays because you talk about the offensive line being underwhelming the last few years. I think since the departure, they called them the rideouts with, you know, John Mechie, Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs. Then you got the Jamison Williams came in. After that, there was a huge drop off. They just were not making plays. So you've got a fresh start there. And some guys, like I said, Kendrick, Kobe, Jalen Hale was a speedster who I think everybody expected a lot out of. He had a significant knee injury a couple of weeks ago. We don't know what the timetable is for him to get back. I think if you're an Alabama fan, you start with Jeremy Bernard. You feel good about that. And then you hope one of the true freshmen, maybe multiple of them, can make a difference. The five-star kid, Ryan Williams, looks like an absolute playmaker, ready to go, I think, day one potentially. I think he could be a star. He just isn't going to get on campus until the summer. And the guy who's made the most waves this spring, Caleb Odom, who actually signed as a tight end, 6'5", 6'6", moved him over to receiver. He has the athleticism to play there. And he is just making – he's just mossing guys right now in the spring. So I think there's a lot of optimism, but excuse me, a lot of question marks at that position.
Alex, has anything jumped out to you as a surprise? Obviously, everything is new right now in Kalen DeBoer's first spring, but has there been anything that while covering the Crimson Tide you've been surprised about, or maybe just even biggest takeaways from the spring thus far?
Excuse me. The lack of depth at cornerback is a little alarming. We saw one of the young guys come off the field with an injury during practice the other day, and they were at that point down to four cornerbacks. Excuse me. So it's a little bit of worry. You wonder how they backfill at that position. So that's a little bit of a concern. But overall, I think just seeing what the offense looks like is really interesting. Seeing three and four wide receivers on the field almost at all times. A wide open offense. They're really playing well in the scrimmages and in practices. So that's been interesting. And just the overall way they're building the program. You have a GM in Courtney Morgan. You have a new creative staff. They're really trying to be intentional in what they're doing and building for the future and what college football is and will be, not what it was. So I'm very interested to see how that plays itself out in recruiting, not just high school, but with the transfer portal. So how does that all come together? It's an impressive staff, but the mix of Washington guys, SEC guys, how does all that come together in the first season? I think there's still a lot to be determined, but I think there's a lot, if you're an Alabama fan, you're excited and looking forward to.
Alex, it's been interesting. It's actually been fascinating to see the other fan bases. Once Nick Saban decided to hang it up, it didn't matter who the Alabama Crimson Tide hired. I think the opposing fan bases in the SEC almost celebrating the quote-unquote downfall or demise of Alabama football. And, you know, I just wonder, what has been the mood around Tuscaloosa this spring? I'd imagine there's a massive chip on the shoulder.
Oh, yeah.
It seems like everyone outside of the program is expecting to take some massive step back, or at least just not be what they were. It's like, ding dong, the witch is dead, right? Mm-hmm. People are like, this is our opportunity. Now, the entire offseason, and for us on the content side, we're talking about, hey, who does this benefit most? Who's going to move up the rungs of the ladder and knock Bama down a peg or two? And of course, you know, you guys and Bama hears all that noise. How have they used that as fuel to the fire? Is that something they talk about, they think about? Like, what has been the overall mood of Kalen DeBoer's program when it feels like it's almost like Bama against the world at this point?
I don't think there's any doubt that there will be a significant chip on this team's shoulder. I think there already is because of the question marks, the attrition that's happened. I think there is a, you know, we're in this against everybody else, kind of like what you said. So understanding that everybody else has been gunning for you for the longest time and rather unsuccessfully, really. I mean, with the exception of Georgia, LSU every now and then, scary games against Auburn. But by and large, Alabama has owned the SEC, I mean, owned all of college football. So everybody's waiting on it to die. But I think that fuels them. I think the Alabama fan base, I think you look at there's a reason the Roll Tide Willies of the world, and I don't care about nothing but the tide. I'm going to clean that up. But I think that is part of what resonates, right, is this feeling that you think we're going away, we think we're going nowhere. And I think there's some reason to be optimistic about that. Yeah, there are question marks about where Alabama fits in the future of college football. There are question marks about their NIL capabilities, because ultimately that will define how most successful programs would be. But what Greg Byrne did when he had the task of a lifetime, he went out and hired arguably the most credentialed coach he could possibly find in college football. Like, I know Kalen DeBoer doesn't have ties to the SEC, but he's won everywhere, literally everywhere he's ever been. And he took a dumpster fire at Washington and in 2 years had it in a national championship game. Like, come on. Like, that's incredible. And that's a program with very limited NIL resources. And he turned that thing around in a hurry. And it was not a year in which you laughed at the Pac-12. I know, RIP, Pac-12's gone. That was a damn good conference last year, and they owned it. And everybody expected them to lose to Oregon every time they played Oregon, and they didn't. This guy knows how to coach football. So I think everybody was waiting on Alabama to fall. Everybody was waiting on the mass exodus, and there were a lot of it after Saban left. Getting a guy like Ryan Williams to come back definitely stemmed the tide. I think a lot of people make comparisons to Nick Saban's initial recruitment of Julio Jones. I don't know if it's that yet, but I think it sort of planted the flag and said, hey, we're not going anywhere. Hey, we're still going to recruit at a really high level. It's just what's TBD is how successful can you be year one? What is a successful season? What will Alabama fans view as a successful season? Because the target will be on their back. But I think this team's going to relish that.
Alex, Kalen DeBoer's first A-Day upcoming this weekend. What are you most looking forward to? Are there things in particular that you want to see, you feel like Bama fans most want to see, that, you know, we're keeping a close eye on? What are you most anticipating from the A-Day on Saturday?
Yeah, low-key, I think what Alabama fans want to see is how they kick the football. I know that's the least interesting thing from the outside, but they had, like, an automatic guy for the longest time in Will Riker. What does it look like now with Talty at the kicker position? But I think it is, how does Jalen Milroe fit in this offense? How is he developed? What have they built around him? Because Kalen DeBoer has had different versions of his offense. He's asked quarterbacks to do different things, to the point where Michael Penix started as a runner, ran very little compared to what you'd think given his athleticism at Washington last year. So what does it look like in terms of how often they're asking him to run, how often they're asking him to pass, how much he's stretching the field vertically? So it starts with Milroe. It's those young receivers. It's an offensive line that, frankly, I think is going to maybe have a little bit of a hard time at 8A just because of the numbers at that position that we've gone over, an injury to Jaden Roberts. I think the focus will be there. And then those freshman playmakers in the secondary. I think those are some pretty good places to start. And then just, I think, big picture, you know, we can't get away from the fact that it was a seminal moment when Alabama packed Bryant-Denny Stadium for a spring game, for Nick Saban's first game. Nobody had ever seen that before. A lot of programs tried to copy it since, but it planted the flag to the point where Nick Saban said he did not expect it, and it was the springboard for them moving forward. So what is the reception like? How many people come out? It's a very different time, right? Like in 2007, you couldn't stream a game. I mean, it was on a local channel, I want to say. It wasn't on ESPN. Like, it's very different now. So it's easy to sit at home. I wouldn't say anything bad about Alabama fans for doing that. But what is the rallying around the program going to look like, knowing that, again, like we alluded to, the target on the back? So I'm curious to see what the turnout's like, because normally it's not an important thing. I think it might say something about how Alabama fans view the program and how much they are getting behind it, knowing that a lot of people are expecting a fallback.
To your point, Alex, the only SEC spring game that'll be televised to a national audience on ESPN this Saturday, I believe 4 p.m. Eastern is the kickoff time at Bryant-Denny Stadium. Alex Scarborough does a fantastic job talking all things Alabama Crimson Tide, covering the Crimson Tide for the 24/7 affiliate. Alex, appreciate you taking the time, man. Let's definitely do it again soon.
My pleasure.